I'm Dee Dee Madigan, and this is The Wrap Up, the Daily's weekly podcast rounding up all of the news that you should know about. Today is Friday, December 7th. Over the summer, Daily News reporter Max Wasserman was walking around the U District when he came across a flyer that warned passersby to not rent from several apartments, which were all owned by the nation's largest student housing company, American Campus Communities, or ACC. Since then, Wasserman has been working on a story to find out what was behind those flyers that he saw that day.
So my name is Max Wasserman, and I'm a reporter with The Daily. To tell the story about this story, I'm going to have to talk about something that happened this summer. I was walking down 50th heading towards University Ave, and I saw this poster on a street post. And I started reading it over, and it said all these awful things about this big landlord in the neighborhood mistreating tenants. And there was an email on the bottom, and I decided to reach out to them. And I ended up meeting with a guy who was part of this tenant association. And he told me that this big landlord, American Campus Communities, which owns three of the biggest apartment buildings in the U District, has been illegally entering tenants' units, among other complaints. And over the last 4 months, I looked into those allegations, and I found that some of them were actually happening.
Could you talk about some of the people you talked to and their experiences?
Yeah. A lot of the people I talked to were working age. They had graduated college. They had families. There was a couple students. But as a whole, it reflected the varied demographic in some of these buildings. One of the buildings was actually developed with the help of the University of Washington. And written into the lease for that building was a promise asking that whoever owned the building maintained it as a community-friendly space. And a lot of the issues that ended up arising were that tenants felt that those rules were being neglected. A lot of them were families.
When you first reached out to the email that was on this flyer and stuff, who was it that you contacted, and what was that process like of communicating with them?
I reached out to a guy by the name of Justin Gifford. He, if I recall correctly, is a physician's assistant down at the UW Medical Center. And he was one of the organizing tenants. So there's the ACC Tenant Association, and it's a group of tenants who formed in response to a lot of the complaints that they were seeing. And to get a little bit more background on that, this company purchased these three buildings over the course of 2017, and in that transition is when a lot of the complaints of illegal entries were occurring, and the tenant association formed because they felt like nothing was being done. And they wrote letters to the Board of Regents, and they appeared at the city, university, I'm going to botch it. It's called CUCAC. it's CUCAC, and it's this coalition of neighborhood representatives and university officials, and it advises the city of Seattle on growth in the neighborhood. And this tenant association went to one of the meetings over the summer. It was a June meeting, and they outlined everything that has been going on. And this was everything from overcharged utilities, illegal entries, installing individual locks in multifamily units. So there were families living in a building, and these were rent-reduced units that had, you know, multiple bedrooms. And they said that maintenance installed locks in every one of their bedrooms. So, like, you would need an individual key to get into each one of those rooms. And tenants saw this as, like, a blatant attempt to change the demographic of the building. The company denies that. They say that this was something that tenants actually wanted and that they've since wanted. But, yeah, the formation of the Tenant Association was largely in response to these complaints about changing the demographic at one of the buildings.
So the company that took over these buildings, are they local or are they like a national company?
They're a national company. They have over 200 properties, and they specialize in apartment buildings that are within a quarter mile of college campuses. So they mainly deal in student housing, and that's why a lot of the tenants thought that they were trying to change the demographic to make it fit better into its portfolio.
I see. And then when you talk about legal entry, what does that exactly mean?
Yeah, under Seattle law, A landlord cannot enter a tenant's unit without proper notification, and that changes based off what they're entering a unit for. If it's an emergency, they can enter within a day, sometimes without notice, actually. If a pipe burst and it's flooding and it's really dangerous, they could just enter. But if it's a non-emergency maintenance, if someone fills out a work order, say they have like a sink that's not working, they need to be given 2 days' notice, the tenants, about somebody that's going to be entering their apartment. And I actually spoke to somebody who said that his apartment was illegally entered on a number of occasions where he wasn't provided the notice, and one of them was filmed. He had a security camera pointed to his door, and back in September, someone unlocked his door and left it unlocked for 36 hours. And he came back after that time and found that his door was open. Nothing had been stolen, but it had happened enough times that he was really concerned.
What exactly is being done, I guess? What has this tenant group, tried to do to talk to the company and try to mitigate these issues?
So after the tenant association reached out to the university, there were conversations between the university and the company. And one of the things that came out of that was that the company promised they would address two rules in the lease that a lot of tenants complained about. One of them was a rule banning pets in a building called Bridges at 11th. And another rule in the same building had to do with being able to relocate tenants within 24 hours notice. And that's not the same thing as an eviction. Written to the lease, it says that they could relocate tenants to a different unit in one of the three buildings that they own. And the company said that that was because if there was an unsafe situation where a roommate was in danger, they wanted to be able to move them around. But a lot of tenants felt that that was a clause written in to be able to evict tenants at a moment's notice. And so after the association, the tenant association, raised the issue and the university brought it to the company said, okay, we'll look into these and we'll change something. And in a new lease that was provided to the Daily, there was wording to suggest that pets are now allowed. You can have them approved if they're a service pet, or if they're if you submit the proper paperwork, you can have them in your unit and pay a fee. There is yet to be wording to reflect that the 24-hour relocation notice has been taken out. The company posted a flyer on tenants' door in September saying that they would no longer honor it, but a lot of tenants don't think that's enough. They want it to be written into their lease. The company has promised that they won't follow it. They said instead they'll give tenants 5 days' notice if they want to relocate them.
And what about how did the company that owns the buildings address the illegal entries and like the overcharging of utilities when those are brought to them?
For the illegal entries, I'll preface this by saying I spoke to a senior vice president at ACC. The manager of the building who a lot of the tenants complained about, who actually presided over all three buildings, was not made available to comment. The company did not want her to be interviewed for this article. So I can't speak to a lot of what happened specifically, but the man I spoke to, Chris Kelly, he handles acquisitions for the company, acknowledged that these illegal entries had happened. He said it was a part of the transition. You know, when you trade property, things are bound to change, mistakes will be made. So they did own up to it to an extent. Per the overcharged fees, that was something that they kind of, I don't want to go and like introduce like a bias, but they kind of dodged that question. And part of that was the nature of a lot of these tenant complaints. There wasn't really a whole lot of hard evidence to back them up. The illegal entries were unique because there was video footage. The neglecting the promise of a community-friendly space was unique because they installed locks. So it's like there's these physical markings of, you know, something being done, but a lot of them was just hearsay or somebody said something, somebody reported something. And that was really hard to bring up with the company because, you know, you can't really dig into it if you don't have the evidence to back it up.
Right. Would any of this then like be grounds for any like legal action then on the part of the tenant group?
There has been one case brought before the Office of the Hearing Examiner in Seattle where one tenant said that they were being overcharged for utilities. And if I recall correctly, the company actually refunded them the utilities before the case was decided. But the hearing examiner decided that it was overcharged. So that was handled legally. The tenant who had footage of his unit being entered illegally, he actually got a lawyer and asked that the company pay a fine, about $100, which under Seattle law, if a landlord enters a tenant's unit without permission after being noticed, given a notice, asking them not to do that in the future, the tenant can fine them $100 per illegal entry. So that was an amount that was paid in that situation. So there were two confirmed cases where there was some sort of legal involvement.
So is there anything else that you want to add or talk about in reporting the story or interesting things that happened?
I think we've covered most of it, actually.
All right. You can find Max's article on the Daily website, which I will link with this blog post. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You can read the rest of Max's article on the Daily website. And lastly, the other news you should know about. On Monday, the Daily published a piece detailing what exactly went wrong with the University School of Dentistry. Managing editor and writer Christine McManigal explains how, despite the fact that the School of Dentistry was rising in rankings for research, other parts of the school, like staff size, were on the decline. As of November, they had racked up a total of $38 million in debt. Many trace the troubles of the school to previous dean Dr. Joel Berg, who many accused of reckless spending and caused a sort of division among faculty between those who supported him and those who didn't. Gary Chiodo was named the interim dean in August, is overseeing changes to the school as it tries to rebuild the program. You can read the whole article on the Daily website. Rising prices in the housing market in Seattle are hindering faculty recruitment. The median price of a single-family home climbed to $725,000 in April, which is likely to have played into the decision of many potential faculty when deciding to take an offer from the university or not. Faculty Senate Chair George Sanderson said that about 40% of the university's current faculty will be retired in 10 years, and that it will be necessary to recruit talent to maintain the same quality level of research that the university has been putting out. The University of Washington Center for Cardiovascular Innovation is at the forefront of medical technology with their project using 3D printing to build hearts for practice of individual procedures. Practitioners can take the model of the heart and practice different approaches based on the unique structure of the heart. That wraps up this week's news. Thank you for listening. This will be the last episode of the quarter and the year. Be sure to subscribe to the wrap-up on iTunes so you don't miss any new episodes when we return in January 2019. In addition to the Soundbite Network's current podcast, which you can listen to on iTunes and the website uwpodcast.com, we'll be adding 3 new shows next quarter. The Civil Experiment is a podcast hosted by Neva Ashkenazi, which digs into the work of ASU Dub. Earth Tones is a weekly podcast hosted by Alana Green and Rachel Frick about news from the environmental science world. And lastly, Gabe Adler will be hosting Groove 202, a podcast featuring some of the local music acts from around town. Stay tuned to hear a promo for The Civil Experiment. I'm Dee Dee Madigan. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next year.
The ASU Dub is the only official student group that is directly tied to UW administration. But the real action happens in the Student Senate, where students establish the official opinion of the UW student body. How they arrive at those opinions is a lot more complicated. This podcast explores how students participate in civil society through the administrative structure. It's social science with a political edge. My name is Neva Ashkenazi, and this is The Civil Experiment. Starting January 2019, tune in every Tuesday on the Daily Soundbite Network.